Hi, I'm Jessica Carollo, creator and star of Obstructed View, and you're listening to That'll Play with Matt and John.
Hey, That'll Play listeners, this is Matt. Just want to give you a quick heads up. In this episode, we're going to be doing a deep dive into the TV series Lost. So if you haven't seen it yet or you don't want to be spoiled, this is your official spoiler alert. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from New York City, this is That'll Play, the podcast tailored to fit your ears perfectly. Here are your hosts, Matt and John.
Hey everyone, welcome to That'll Play with Matt and John. I'm John.
And I'm Matt. Welcome to another episode, everyone. For more of our episodes, as always, you can go to thatwillplaypod.com. Find us on iTunes and Stitcher. Follow us on Twitter at thatwillplaypod. And search for us on Facebook at facebook.com/thatwillplay. And as always, you can find us on the Musings of a Geek Network, musingsofageek.com. Spark Radio Podcast Network at sparkradio.us. And now on the Couch Potato Podcast Network. John, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. How you doing over on your end?
All right, not too bad.
Good.
Getting ready for the fall?
Oh, yes. I'm just roaring to go as it's 95 degrees in New York in September.
Yeah, funny how we've gotten closer to Halloween, and now it's finally 100 degrees here in New York.
Yeah, I mean, we only waited 3 months for 90-degree weather.
Right.
So now that I have no summer clothes available in my room, I'm kind of stranded.
Packed everything away.
I got pants out ready.
Jumped the gun on that one a little bit.
Yeah, but it's been really hot the last couple of days here. But
right,
you know, we're getting by.
Well, speaking about hot, the fall TV season's coming hot in a little bit.
That was a good transition.
You like that? I was working on that for about 10 minutes. So we got all the big TV shows coming back this fall. Some stuff that I'm excited about, like The Walking Dead. And things like that. I don't know if you're following any shows currently that you're excited about.
No, I'm not.
Hard Knocks, the NFL show.
I saw an episode of that. That was pretty entertaining.
Right. But well, the fall TV season kind of got us thinking about how TV has kind of gone through a revolution in the past 10 years or so. And it's now kind of the golden form of entertainment. And it's kind of taken over as the premier, especially as far as the long form dramatic shows, the premier way of entertainment, even more so than movies these days.
Of course. Yeah, that's a good point.
And me and you, we were big fans of the show Lost. And from 2004 to 2010, it was a big event. And that was kind of it was one of the shows that really ushered in this new golden age of television. And me and you, from week to week, we'd talk about every episode. And we'd get together and watch the episodes, you know, and then we'd debate them afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, Lost turned into a lifestyle. It wasn't just a show.
Right.
You know, you kind of lived and died by what was in the show in each episode. You know, themes, music, references in novels.
Very few shows kept you hanging week to week like that show.
Yeah.
And it kind of changed, and it kind of came around at the right time where social media was really kicking in. Around 2005 is when Twitter and Facebook really, you know, were invented. And then Lost started taking people beyond their regular, you know, Monday morning water cooler talk about like what they watched on TV, because people were now teasing stuff and talking about stuff and debating things on social media. And it's really, now that's taken to a whole different level these days with shows like Breaking Bad and Orange is the New Black. You see these shows being teased and spoiled for people on social media all the time.
I think we're probably in the best spot for television because people are actually tweeting and leaving messages on Facebook during the shows.
Right, exactly.
Which I think is great because it keeps an audience within another audience. You know what I mean? Like this conversation being talked about your show.
Right,
if you're
exactly.
Like a producer or creator of a show like Lost.
It keeps people involved and it keeps people excited.
Yeah, I mean like Breaking Bad, they thrived on social media.
Right.
You know, that was pretty good for them, which Lost never had that that kind of advantage.
Right.
When they were on air.
Towards the end, they did, though.
Yeah, once the later seasons hit, right. They were kind of taking advantage of it. But the first three seasons, maybe even the first two seasons, no one was chatting about it.
It was all word of mouth.
But pretty much. That's how I found out about the show. Right. It was through you. You told me about it. You like, you have to check out the first episode. You have to check out this first season.
Right.
It's fantastic. It's going to blow your mind. And I was captivated within the first 10 minutes of that pilot.
Right. So we like to do these kind of retrospective episodes every once in a while, kind of like we did with Dana from How Is This Movie a few weeks ago with the Steven Spielberg episode, which we got a lot of great feedback from. So thanks for everyone for that, by the way. So we wanted to kind of look back on Lost, like it's been a few years now, talk about, you know, what it meant to us, how we related to it, go through some of the major themes and plot points and just get everyone's thoughts on it. And we have a special guest here today to help us out with that. We have my sister, Sarah Candela, who is not only a literary expert, master survivor, she is also That'll Play's biggest fan. So welcome, Sarah.
Hello, everybody.
To your first episode, and I'm sure not your last of That'll Play.
I'm very excited.
Sarah's been doing a ton of research in the week leading up to this. Like I said, Sarah is a literary expert. She's an English teacher, so she's very much into the thematic elements of Lost, and she's here to help us dissect those today.
And she's got better grammar than both of Matt and I combined.
Oh, I'm not sure about that.
Well, we're getting better.
You're going to notice who can speak better.
I did speak. I did fix a couple of those Google Docs grammar mistakes. Yeah, that
well, that's what we need you for. You should just become the
editor.
The editor of our show officially.
You should see my notes. They're terrible. They're just horrible.
So yeah, just real quick, I wanted to run through like the main plot of Lost and some of the main themes and what the themes and why we related to them so well, and you know what we took from the show. And I'll start with Sarah since she's our guest. Why was Lost so compelling for you? And then I'll run through the plot real quick if you want as well, like just the basic overview.
Well, the compelling nature of it, I think, relates to what you guys were just saying about how the second that show caught on, it was like a community that you could kind of gather around, and the way we all did together for years,
right,
every single week. And it wasn't just, yeah, we would gather together and watch it and talk about it, but then it was like, yeah, you went to bed that night, but the next day you wake up and it's like, oh my god, what the hell was that?
Right.
What the hell happened last
still,
night?
You're still processing it.
And you can't even think about it. I just rewatched season one and I'm like, oh my god.
Right.
I don't even, it's like I didn't even watch it before.
even though you know how everything turns out in the end, it's still
what the hell is that, a hatch?
It hooks you. Yeah. it's one of the few shows that ever did that to anyone, and now people have their own opinions of the show now that it's over. A lot of people were upset with the way it ended and the way it turned out as far as the plot, but there's no denying the social impact and the social phenomenon that it was at the time.
Yeah, I mean, looking back, I don't think anyone, no matter what ending they chose to use, I don't think anyone would have been happy regardless.
Right.
Because the show was so open-ended with its themes.
Mm-hmm.
And you can interpret it a million different ways. So anyone that saw that last episode probably interpreted that show within their own perspective.
Right.
So I don't know.
So anyone who doesn't know the basic plot, obviously, it's a plane takes off from Australia to L.A., crash lands on a mysterious island, 48 survivors initially. We get to know about 10 to 12 main characters, and at first you think it's a regular stranded desert island type of plot.
There's a lot of chaos at the beginning.
And there's just a lot of chaos, you know, going through the wreckage, basic survival stuff. But as you get into the meat of the episodes, you start to notice mysterious things about the island. Monsters and sci-fi elements that you, as a viewer, you're just not expecting in the pilot episode. And I think that's kind of what got people hooked on the show, is like at the end of the second or third episode, you're just you're left saying, what? Like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah, just to jump in really quickly, that unique perspective where they're jumping from character to character, but yeah, you know Jack is the main character at the very beginning, but you're discovering the island with them as an audience, and I
sure,
think
that's a good point.
Something that not a lot of shows have even done since then.
I learned a lot about flying on airplanes watching that show.
About how you have to buy two tickets if you're a certain weight.
I learned who not to sit next to on an airplane.
Right. Don't sit next to the chick in the handcuffs.
Or the fat guy.
Or definitely not.
Well, there's a lot of... I have issues with the scientific elements of how the plane crashed. Because
I'm sure you
there's
do.
A scene where they show the tail of the plane breaking off. And it's a view from inside the plane. But you see outside the back of the plane once the tail breaks off. Anyone who knows anything about planes knows that the plane would then start spinning uncontrollably in circles, but they just float casually down onto the sand. That kind of annoys me.
It's the numbers, man.
I think Lost kind of set the standard for airplane crashes on TV and in film.
Well, the production value is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, it's realistic. I watched Flight with Denzel Washington.
Right.
And
another unrealistic flight.
Very unrealistic, because I've never seen a plane cruising upside down 200 feet above ground.
Well, not every pilot has the swagger of Denzel, that's why.
Right, but he landed that plane in almost one piece.
Right. Incredible stuff.
But, going back to what you were saying, good point about the airplanes.
So we have, as Sarah mentioned before, Jack is the main protagonist. He's the first guy we meet on the show. We come across him lying in the jungle right after the crash. Jack's running through the jungle trying to figure out what's going on, and we're right there with him, as Sarah said. Like, we have no idea where he is, like what just happened, and then he runs out onto the beach to find the crash. And Jack, as we go along, is a very complex character, and I'll turn to Sarah again for that, just to kind of dissect what's going on with him a little bit.
Okay, well, just to jump on that opening scene again too, I love that the sound that, you know, the music that's accompanying him waking up or getting up and suddenly, you know, thinking what the hell just happened. But I want to just mention that it begins first with his eyes opening.
Yes.
And we noticed, and when we were first watching this, when it was first on TV and recently rewatching, that during all of season one, the first time you're going to focus on a new character, their episode begins with their eyes opening.
Yeah.
And that's kind of cool. Because it's a new, it's introducing you to something brand new, a new concept of a show. But also at the very beginning, you're like, each character you know is going to be in for some sort of a change.
That's
and some sort of a surprise.
That's a good point, because I, looking back now, you can, when they open their eyes, that's, you're seeing the episode through their perspective.
Yes.
Through their eyes.
Right.
And the music is beautifully scored.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Michael Giacchino. Yeah. He composed a lot of the soundtrack for the episodes.
Who's an Oscar-winning composer now.
And I think he set this new standard for composition with music as that kind of next character that you need to thrive a scene.
Right.
The music is scary.
Yeah. It's scary. Not happy music.
It's scary when it needs to be. And then also, like, we'll touch on this a little bit later, too, about how each episode is focused around a different character. And it shows you more about their past via flashbacks. And we could talk about how that was also a new style of storytelling in television that had never been used before, really. But also the score changes from episode to episode, too. Each character and each character-centric episode has its own theme. Has its own feel to it. So the breadth and the width of the of the score is just immense.
It adds like life. It's like it's breathing. It's like the show is alive. It really is.
Right. It changes from every episode, and it was scores like that don't exist in television that often. It's scored like a major motion picture.
Right.
And it was produced that way too.
Right.
At the time, I think the most expensive TV pilot ever produced.
Now, jumping to what you said about the pilot just now, the sound editing is unbelievable.
Yeah.
The scene when Jack discovers the wreckage and everyone's screaming and there's chaos. And I don't think there's been a pilot that's been that large in scale production wise.
Yeah. That
ever since.
Single episode is one of the best things ever. But just to go back to, cause we keep going back to Jack, and just to introduce him a little tiny bit, Jax, you know, he's opening his eyes. He's figuring out, where am I? What's happened to us? I was on a plane. Where am I now? What's going on around me? All you hear is that kind of scary music. And then it pans out as he discovers the world around him. You discover it. And we learn that right away, Jack's rushing. All we know about him is he's rushing around trying to help people. Right. We're like, what the hell is happening? And he doesn't know. And then eventually you start to learn through flashbacks that he had similar issues in his life at home.
Right.
You learn that they're on an island. You learn kind of little bits about where he was, where he, why he was in Australia. And then you learn that he has these issues with leadership and with needing to be a leader.
Right.
And with needing to be in charge a little bit. And then it'll all, eventually we learn it goes back to his father, but that's a separate issue.
Sure. We'll touch on that later.
Now, Jack, his profession off the island was, he was a surgeon. So
right.
You can kind of sense the comparison with mm-hmm. why he was running around.
Right.
Because usually if you're not in a emergency career, you wouldn't know really how to handle a situation like that.
No, yeah.
It's usually not everyone's first instinct. It's usually everyone for himself type attitude, which is pretty much what a lot of the people are doing when he runs out onto the beach.
Right. Yeah. And you love him right away because he's helping everybody.
Right. And his last name, you later find out, is Shepherd.
Right.
So there's a theme of following
and
leadership with that last name, which is pretty cool. I thought
keeping everybody together.
Yeah. He's kind of like the glue for the small community on the island.
Now, that's another thing with Lost that we can also touch on later as we go into more of the characters, is that characters' names and even characters from their pasts or books that they read and things like that all have meaning in this show. They're all meticulously placed and meticulously named. Things like that. They all relate back to their character in some way.
And it's those details that really latched people on to the discussions. When people were talking about it,
you'd forget.
You'd forget, like, oh yeah, Sawyer was reading that book. Like, what does that mean?
Of Mice and Men.
And then you're talking about it for like weeks, and I think that's what happened after the first three seasons, and people are expecting a show so intricately detailed to lead somewhere. You're keeping track of details, of character names, of personalities, of backstories, and then suddenly it falls off the deep end.
Right. Now, say what you will about where those details lead, because that's one of the people's major complaints about the show, is that a lot of those clues that were dropped throughout the first couple seasons never really paid off in the way that they had hoped, I guess. But still, if you think about it from a writing perspective of the people who created the show, how genius is it of a way to hook people and to get people coming back week to week to your show and to get people talking about it, to be like, to pepper in these little...
I think they were blown away. They probably were like, oh my God,
they
the
were
response
shocked.
To this show is unbelievable.
Yeah. I think they didn't have a game plan.
They were on like every talk show.
Which I think they even admitted they didn't have.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, eventually, they're like, oh, let's just make Sawyer read this book.
Right.
I have a book laying around. Here you go.
There's like an Alice in Wonderland reference. Like, we'll just throw that in.
Right.
That doesn't make sense.
It's all about what they name the episode.
Yeah,
you know, they name the episode
through the looking glass.
Like, if they name it through the looking glass, that's it. That's all I'm going to be thinking about.
And as an audience member, you look into it so much. You feel like there should be a deeper meaning with all these references. Like, you know,
that's the thing. It got people talking so much and on such a deep level that they got so emotionally, I mean, we did too, to a certain extent. So
you cried. I know you cried a couple times.
I'm not, you know,
I cried last night looking at the notes.
I'm not above crying over a fake fantasy show.
Come on, it's Jack.
It's funny how we don't cry over real news, but we cry over a little dispute on the island of Lost.
You don't cry.
It ruins my week. And it did ruin my week.
When you read about the dispute in the Middle East, you don't shed a tear.
Just a regular day in the Middle East.
That's what we call first world problems. What's going on in Lost? I can't believe it.
My DVD player won't work. I can't see season two.
My DVR didn't record the latest episode.
Have you noticed if you watch the DVD versions of Lost, the quality is so different from the later seasons released?
Right, because the later seasons are all Blu-ray.
Blu-ray, yeah. I mean, I feel kind of cheated. Like, I'm not... Right. Every episode should be in Blu-ray quality for me to enjoy.
I know, we're spoiled.
And even the menus are set up differently too. I'm like, this is
once they went back in time, that was it.
Definitely a first world problem.
Yeah, we're not touching on the
I threw out all my old DVDs and I have to buy new ones now.
Now let's run through real quick, just cause before we move on to other stuff, I want to touch on like some of the other main characters that are probably the more identifiable characters to audiences. First, we have Kate, who's the first person that Jack really bonds with and meets on the island. And he has her sew up his the gash that he has on the side of his chest from the crash, and they kind of bond over, and you get to know their relationship grows from that point. And there's some similarities between Kate and Jack, but Kate also has her own issues of running away from things, as
yeah,
we know.
And it's a little interesting, like, as you just mentioned, one of the first scenes we see of them together, which it's not intimate in a romantic way, really, but it's intimate in the fact that she's fixing him a little bit, and he's the one used to doing the fixing.
Oh.
And you get very few scenes throughout season one of Jack being fixed by other people. And when he lets that down is when you start to see things in him that, you know, what he's afraid of. And I don't think it really happens again until the blood transfusion of the end.
That's
when Sun yells at him. She has to scream at him minutes. It goes on and on. She's like, Jack, stop it.
Right.
Like, let it go. Like, nothing's going to happen. He's going to die.
Now, Kate's character, did you guys have any suspicion, like, off the bat that she was a criminal on the run?
Spoiler alert.
Well,
sorry. Yes. Well,
if you haven't seen three episodes of Lost.
Well, that's the next thing I was going to say about Jack, though. Jack, I think it's interesting because I think Kate's a little mysterious to him right at the beginning.
Sure.
And he's the one that makes the connections between her and the Marshal and all of that stuff as the first like five episodes go on. So we're learning about her through his discovery, which I think is also a very interesting storytelling detail. You know, it's not until her flashbacks start that we get some of the truth, but he sees little weird things about the way she acts and
right.
the way she kind of keeps away. She wants to go on the hikes all the time. Everybody comments on that.
Yeah.
They're all making fun of that. She wants to be out in the jungle running away.
Right.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to be a part of any society.
I knew she was up to no good when they had her flashback scene and she was a young lady, a young girl, I guess, and she was caught stealing.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
That's mm-hmm. how it starts, you know?
It always starts when you're stealing candy or
it's funny how
cheap items.
It's funny how Jack is kind of like not suspicious of her from the beginning, but he's kind of got like, you know, you could see it in his eyes.
Yes.
He's not completely sure what she's all about, but he still lets it slide because she's hot. He's like, whatever.
She uses the hot card too many times on the show.
Matt and I were noticing this week that she never once wears a shirt that hides her belly button. They're always right above.
That's meticulously planned.
That was a good suitcase full of like baby tees that she found.
I'm not complaining. I thoroughly enjoyed that.
You know what? I could use a suitcase full of baby tees just myself.
I like how all their clothes were like well-pressed. And
right.
There
that,
was really...
Yeah.
Like, they found, like, really good clothes.
Actually, I actually thought that Kate does look very dirty of the time. I think it is pretty realistic. Shannon keeps herself very clean.
Well, that's part of her
character. Yeah, part of her character.
Right. I mean, Kate is more of a rambunctious character, so I think it fits her style.
Right.
Like, yes, I agree.
She's not afraid to get dirty.
I also think that she's
right.
excited.
You know what I mean?
Ow!
Oh, boy. That's a later theme.
Right. No, but I think the show does a pretty good job, actually, in season one of trying to make the character, like, you still, it's a TV show at the end of the day. So the character, they want to have the characters have some sort of sex appeal, but
right.
they do a pretty good job of making everyone look a little bit dirty and unshaven and,
mm-hmm.
and you know.
Until you meet Rousseau, then it's like, whoa.
Oh, boy.
I had a couple of problems with some of the, like you were saying, everyone, how everyone was looking on the show. I mean, if you're stuck on an island and you're hiking maybe 5 to 10 miles a day with
smell really bad
with low, well, not just that, but low calorie intake, you're going to be skinny within a week.
We thought of that. We were thinking about that too a lot. I'm like, they haven't had any boar since like episode 3.
Right.
Since they first went on a hunt, they've
they
been living
on they
fruit.
Live on papayas for like
papaya,
2 weeks.
Mango.
If I go like 3 days without meat, I'm like, I can't even move.
I twitch and I start convulsing and
then we
rolling on the floor.
We have one episode of Sun building a garden.
Right.
And then we don't see anything come from that garden.
Nothing
ever
comes.
Nothing ever comes from it.
She plants basil and like...
more fruit trees.
Right.
Yeah, that's what she gets like seeds from the papayas
she
and plants more.
She plants a papaya tree and it grows in a week. She's got full
papaya.
Yeah,
that's the thing. You're thinking like, she must think they're really living there forever. Because
right.
that papaya tree is not coming up for a long
well,
time.
Some people... they settle in quicker than others to the fact that they're going to be living on this island for a while.
Sun's the smartest person in season one.
She's got the brains.
She's awesome.
Now, if they took a couple notes from Castaway with Tom Hanks, and if they made every character look like him, no one would watch. So they had to keep, as you were saying, the sex appeal for us to keep watching.
Speaking of sex appeal, let's talk about Locke.
Yeah, I was going to say, speaking of characters who, you know, dug in the first few episodes and kind of came to grips with, you know, this might be where I be for the rest of my life, and I'm okay with that. John Locke, my personal favorite character, I know
he's
Sarah
awesome.
Has a soft spot for him too.
It makes me cry.
Has, you know, some really, really deep issues coming to the island. And that's what the island represents for a lot of these characters, is forcing them to deal with these issues that they come to it with. And Locke, we meet him as a regular old man. You think he's outdoors savvy guy.
And he's like a hunter. And
yeah, he's a hunter. He's the one who first finds meat for the crew.
He knows where things are.
Yeah, he just instinctually seems to know what's up as far as where to get things on the island.
Which is weird. You're like, what?
And he learned how to walk within a couple of minutes of being on the island.
I was going to touch on that. Yeah.
You don't know that.
Yeah. Right, you don't know that until his flashback episode, which is a few episodes into season one, that he was in a wheelchair before he got there, which is another one of those moments when we all saw for the first time, we're like, what the shit is going on this island?
When I saw it for the ninth time a few days ago,
crying
my eyes out.
Was it episode, was it nine times you saw it?
No, I don't know how many times I've seen season one, though, obviously I've seen the most because it's the best, but...
When I first saw Locke, I didn't expect him to be the character that he turned into. I just thought he was going to be like this crazy old man. Obviously, he's older than most of the other castaways.
Yes,
and
that's
he had
important too.
More knowledge, and which kind of helps with what you guys brought up before about him hunting for food and
keeping
the community alive.
And that's interesting, though. No, just because he's mentioning his mysterious quality before he's in the jungle, and we're like, oh my god, this guy knows how to survive. He has all these skills from something. First, he's very quiet.
Yeah.
And we get these weird, creepy images of him just like sitting by himself on, you know, on the beach, the orange slice in his mouth.
Sure.
You know, just grinning at nothing. And Jack's like, what's the deal with this guy?
And then
by the end of season one, with that awesome conversation that I know we're going to talk about with him and Kate in the jungle, and they're trying to make important decisions, and he's like, listen, if we survive this, Kate, we're gonna have a Locke problem.
Right.
So it goes from him being mysterious and helpful to at the end Jack being afraid of him.
Right.
And I like Locke's friendship with the young Walt.
Right. We didn't even touch on Walt.
Which I mean, Walt is, we can spend a whole episode on Walt.
Right. Well, before we get to Walt, I want to come back to Walt, but Sarah just touched on it briefly that Locke now being able to walk now on the island, which he couldn't before, and him having some sort of connection with it, knowing what he's doing there, gives him a sense of purpose that he didn't have off the island.
Right.
And that puts him at odds.
Longing for it.
Right. And that puts him at odds immediately with Jack, and they develop kind of a contentious relationship at first, and they have several discussions throughout the show about the reasons why they're at the island. And this is a major theme throughout the show, of whether everything is happening for a reason or if it's just coincidence. The coincidence versus fate theme is something that runs through all six seasons, and it's never more relevant than when you're, you know, listening to a discussion between Jack and Locke.
Right.
And I'm going to play one right here. This is towards the end of season one with Jack and Locke talking about destiny.
I think that's why you and I don't see eye to eye sometimes, Jack. Because you're a man of science.
Yeah. And what does that make you?
Me? Well, I'm a man of faith. Do you really think all this is an accident? That we, a group of strangers, survived? Many of us with just superficial injuries? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason, all of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason.
Brought here. And who brought us here, Jeff?
The island. The island brought us here. This is no ordinary place. You've seen that. I know you have. The island chose you too, Jack. It's destiny.
Now,
John was like laughing under his breath.
When
Locke was talking about superficial injuries,
right?
Like, you were in a wheelchair for a lot of your grown up life,
right?
Superficial, I don't think really describes being stricken to a wheelchair.
Right.
Well, I think he's talking about what they survived with.
Yeah, he's talking about after the crash.
Right. Yeah. Right. But I'm saying, like, he would have had a very hard time trying to survive on an island like that.
Right.
Right. That's interesting.
In a wheelchair.
Right. What would have happened if he didn't?
Yeah.
I don't think at that point in the show.
That's where I was trying to go with
it. Okay.
Right. Does anyone else in the show at that point know that he was in a wheelchair?
At the point when that?
Yeah.
I don't think. He told somebody. It's not Jack, though. It may have been Charlie.
Right.
Because it's either Charlie or Boone. Those are the only two people that he bonds with.
Right.
Really in the jungle, off doing their own little thing.
Right.
Besides Walt, of course.
Right.
His best bud.
Right. Another ambiguous relationship between an older man and a younger guy that me and John have touched on earlier episodes.
Walt's obsessed with him.
These relationships pop up in pop culture all the time, like the Marty McFly, Doc Brown relationship.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we talked about that on a previous episode.
Right, on our sidekicks episode. Like, what's up with that?
You know, that's a duo we didn't bring up, was Locke and Walt.
Right.
That's a good one.
And that's pretty one-sided, because Locke's just there doing his thing. He's in the jungle, and Walt seeks him out time and time again, you know, much to Michael's dismay, of course.
Walt comes with his father, Michael, who...
Bad father
didn't know his son for
but
most
not really
of his,
his
life.
Fault.
Not really his fault, as you get into his flashbacks. We don't have this on the notes, but I want to touch on Michael real quick, because most of the series, Michael spends most of his time looking for Walt.
I will.
Walt!
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 Walt! Walt!
Walt!
Walt!
Walt!
Walt!
Walt!
Walt stays with me.
Walt!
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 I'm not going back without
Walt!
Where are you, man?
Walt!
Let them take me!
Come take me!
I'm coming for Walt!
Walt!
I'm not leaving him out here!
Walt!
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 Don't you ever say his name again, ever!
I'm his father.
My boy.
My boy.
Letting you near my boy.
They took my son.
Stay away from my son.
I'm gonna get back my son.
They took my son.
Where's my boy?
They took my son.
Where the hell is my son?
Son.
You're not taking my son.
My son.
You see my son?
They're not taking my son away.
I'm getting my son back.
Get you with my son again, I'll kill you.
That is amazing.
Talk about daddy issues.
Where'd you find that one, man?
I got that. Thank you to whoever made that on YouTube, because that's...
That's the best thing I've ever heard.
That's ridiculous.
I had no idea you were even going to go in that direction.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
I saved that as a surprise for you guys, because I knew that would get a laugh.
Wow.
But that's his
cracking
character.
Up over here.
That's his character the whole first two seasons. He's like the worst...
He gets the audience stressed out. It's like, come on, leave him alone already. Just let him hang out with Locke.
Right.
Who cares?
I want to see Michael in a situation where he's grocery shopping and trying to find something. It would be the same thing. Where's the bread? Where's the bread? I want my bread. I want my bread. Where's the cereal? Where's the cereal?
You stay away from my cereal.
I want my steaks.
But all right, let's. I just wanted to briefly touch on Michael. So that was really just an excuse to play that clip. But I just want to run through some more of the key characters real quick before we get into some other stuff. I want to touch on Sawyer and Charlie, and then Sun and Jin briefly. I'm going to turn to Sarah to start off with Sawyer, because she just got a new puppy named Sawyer. So she has some keen insight on this.
Well, just like most of the characters, as we get to, you know, we're introduced to them and we're learning about them, we think that they are loners in some way, because they all have mysterious issues that we don't know about yet. But Sawyer is one that actually is lonely by design. He's separating himself from everybody right from the beginning. He picks fights with people. He calls people nicknames that are very fun to keep track of when you're obsessed with the show.
I want to touch on that again in a minute.
He does have a good selection of nicknames.
Yeah, so everyone kind of hates him right away, because he's separating himself and he's creating a little world for himself where he hoards everything. When people need stuff that's important, he's the person that has it. And they even at one point have to physically torture him to try to get something that they need for medical supplies.
Yeah. A very rough scene.
So he's funny. He also has that sex appeal like we were talking about earlier.
Absolutely.
He's always got his shirt off.
He's got the haircut.
Yeah.
Ladies love it.
Off. So, but he creates a little bit of a tension with Jack and Kate. It becomes that whole that triangle is right away. By episode three.
There's a lot of tension between triangle. Those three.
Right.
Because I know Jack and Sawyer are the complete opposite.
Right.
As far as personality wise.
And their ideology.
And morally they're different people.
Right.
And they both are attracted to Kate. So that's their
one thing I just want to say about Sawyer thing. As we learn about his past, he's running away from something, but at the same time running towards it. Which is really interesting. He's running away from something horribly traumatic that happened in his childhood. But when he comes to be an adult, he actually winds up following that same path. And then when he's on the island, I think he doesn't know how to deal with it. And I think gradually through season one, he realizes, wow, now's a time for me to start over. I can, and he gets nicer through season one.
He's a pleasant guy to be around.
Yeah.
You actually don't. That's one of the more unexpected character arcs throughout the first few seasons is that by season three or so, he actually becomes kind of a leader to the group in some ways. And, you know, he still has his quirks and he's, you know, calling everyone funny nicknames.
I traded Mr. Miyagi, the last of my water, for a fish he caught. Give it to Al Jazeera.
Peachy pork pie.
What do you got there, Reron?
Stay out of this metro.
Sawyer, right behind you, jackass.
But, you know, he takes more of a leadership role as he goes on. But as Sarah was saying, you know, he becomes, at the beginning, more of what he's trying to get away from. You know, he had the whole situation in his youth with the con man that conned his family and ended up killing his parents. And he takes on that role in his own life, becomes a con man himself. And then that's all he does on the island. Is
he takes the name of the man.
And there's an episode called The Con Man.
The Long Con.
The Long Con, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's he cons people to get what he wants on the island.
But I think he uses that strategy to his advantage on the island.
Yes.
He gets what he wants.
For a while.
Yeah, he used that as his playing cards.
But by the end of, you know, at the beginning, they have to torture him just to get a little bottle of alcohol to use on someone's wound. But by the end, when Boone is just about to have this blood transfusion, and at the same time, Claire's having a baby. Claire's not even on our list, by the way.
No,
we don't have to talk about her.
So all of that comes at the same time. Two giant medical emergencies, and Jack, by this point, knows Kate's the only one who can talk to Sawyer. So he just says, go get Sawyer. And Sawyer gives it to her immediately. So by the end of that season, he's already started to turn around, and he's interested in helping.
Those first few episodes with Sawyer are great because he just sits by himself and he looks grumpy. And I'm like, I don't like this guy.
He's reading a book.
Then he busts out all the one-liners and jokes. And I mean, the guy's got some angle to him.
He becomes a fan favorite, too.
Yeah, I think he slowly grew as one of my favorite characters.
And then whenever him and Hurley are together, it's hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's got some of his best nicknames are for Hurley.
Yeah.
But let's touch on Charlie real quick before we move on because we're already running along here. But Charlie, another guy who comes to the island with a lot of issues. He's a musician in a famous band called Driveshaft, and he's got a bad drug habit that...
he likes the heroin.
Even up until, you know, they're in the plane right before it crashes, he's, you know, on the nose candy.
Yeah, he was high on that flight, right?
He was actually in the bathroom trying to get a fix.
He's trying to get high.
When the crash happened, and he finally admits that out loud. I forgot who it was to, but screams it in the jungle, midway through the season to someone, you know what I was doing when the plane crashed? You know, I was on heroin. I was in the bathroom getting high. And then his, the truth about him starts to come out. And the only one that knows about it before that is Locke.
Right.
Who helps him.
Seems to be the first one to know about a lot of things.
Well, you know what? He's in the jungle a lot by himself, kind of doing little projects to help people and to help the island. Like he builds Claire a cradle before the baby's born. And then when people find themselves in the island, like Charlie, in the jungle, just walking along, Locke winds up helping them. It's like he's out there in the jungle doing things that are going to help them and coming up and hunting. But then other people will find him and then he helps them as well.
Now,
so maybe the healer winds up being Locke.
Now with Charlie's character, I saw some comparisons with Oasis with
That's what Matt was saying. My husband was saying that as well.
Because his brother was also in the band Driveshaft.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And those two were kind of at odds with each other. A lot of fighting, a lot of arguments.
A lot of where they wanted to take the band. And
yeah.
I think that's where Charlie's problems lie.
So I think that the writers of the show kind of took a page or two from Oasis. And,
yeah.
Because it just, the similarities are just too close to
well, it's
to
one, and
ignore.
He's just another character on the show, and you can point to almost all of them that they were either left behind, betrayed, or let down by the people that were supposed to be there for them the most. And Charlie being his brother,
yeah,
and the lead singer in his band. And building off of that, I wanted to touch on the major theme now of the show. One of the major themes of the show, and that being one that we joke about all the time because it's so prevalent in the show, and that's the daddy issues that are.
Wah,
got daddy issues.
It goes through almost all the characters in the show have some sort of disagreement with their father or some sort of something that happened in their past that they have to deal with on the island that has to do with their parental issues and their family issues.
Yeah, or like a father that wasn't what they expected a father to be, and
they're looking for something
to fill that and don't know how to deal with that, the loss of that issue.
I think that's the one of these things that a lot of people can relate to, and the fact that the cast was so large and so diverse as far as nationalities and backgrounds and things like that, I think it's one of the ways audience connected with the show so much is that they could see themselves in these characters. Like, these characters are doing amazing things on the island, but look how fucked up they are. Like,
they got some problems.
Right, exactly.
You know, they also have
they get worse and worse as you learn more.
If you look at it, I mean, parenting is a big issue in the show.
Yeah, and that's a good point.
And if you want to learn how to be a better parent, watch Lost, because there's some really cruel things that
just
will
don't
happen.
Pay attention to Michael's character.
Michael, no.
He's the anti-father.
Michael is not the definition of good father.
Yeah, Michael's story of being a father, actually, if you think about it,
kind of just fell into it.
Yeah, now that I just rewatched that season, if you were to just think about Michael's storyline, like, he has a nice little, he's not married, but they have a nice relationship. It seems to be pretty good. You don't see that him and the girlfriend have many problems. You just see them shopping for baby stuff. She's pregnant. His next flashback, suddenly she's moving, taking the baby's born.
He wants to be a dad.
He wants to be a dad. And she just says, hey, I accepted this job. Moving to Amsterdam.
Yep,
bye.
Shit.
See ya. She leaves and that's it. And then the kid grows up. By the time he comes to pick him up, his mother dies. Okay.
Right.
So the time he comes to Australia to get him, he's moved to three different countries, Walt, in his 10 years of life. Doesn't even know that he even has a father, really. And he is presented with, Michael presents him with a box of letters that he wrote him his entire life and his mother kept from him.
Right.
So that's incredible to me. Like, it's really sad. And Walt's like, you wrote to me? He's like, yeah, all the time. Your mother didn't want you to see them.
That's
really sad.
Now they would have just talked all over Facebook.
Yeah.
They were just iChatting.
Facebook.
FaceTiming.
FaceTime.
That concept wasn't around back
then. I wonder if I have a dad. He just Googles it.
He pops up on the FaceTime screen and he goes, whoa!
Was there any Wi-Fi on the island?
You know what? We were mentioning the other
Coming
day.
Coming from
like,
the radio tower.
This wasn't that long ago, the show. We're like, why does no one have a single cell phone? Isn't that weird?
That's
not that they would have worked.
That's
but
a great point, actually. They don't find any cell phones.
They
never even bring it up.
No. That was like, what, 2002 or something? Like,
I mean, the show premiered in 2004.
Oh, yeah. So definitely
there were no iPhones yet, but there were Nokias.
But there were primitive cell phones.
Jack and, I don't know about Kate, but all of the characters, Jack, I mean, I would say Claire, Charlie, they would have all had a flip phone, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Why was there no phones?
That's a great.
Never thought about that before.
It's not the most airtight plot.
No,
I'm not. You know,
time
not
travel.
Not to spoil season two, but there was a lot of 70s technology.
That's true. coming right. soon to
which
a hatch near you,
which was kind of futuristic in its own right.
Yes,
right.
You know,
it was
so
pretty awesome.
I don't know.
Now I want to move on to a theme that I'm really into called, the theme of fate versus coincidence that we touched on briefly before with Jack and Locke. And, you know,
awesome scene.
Right. The reasons that they're on the island. Some believe that it's just coincidence. Some believe that they're there for a reason, for a higher purpose. And Locke is someone who's pushing that idea throughout the whole series. And that has a lot to do with he feels like he has a communion with the island, a connection in some way.
And in that respect, he also is readily I guess, able to accept whatever the island is going to give him or help him with. And Jack struggles against that because he's so interested in controlling what's around him. And right. I think that that's part of it, too. When you have faith in something, you know, especially to the degree that Locke does, you're able to accept things, I think, a little bit better.
Right.
So he's like, this is what we're supposed to be doing.
Well, yeah. And we have these arguments in everyday life. This is why it's such a relatable theme, because there are people that are more open to the mystical and to the supernatural and are ready to jump at the chance to believe in those type of things and accept them as reality, where there's the more pessimistic people, which I consider myself one of, that
how dare you?
That they need concrete evidence. They need science to back things up.
And Jack's a surgeon, and he's a scientist in some way.
Yeah, I mean, he went through med school. He went through the motions.
Right.
You won't fool that guy.
If there's no textbook written on it, he's not going to believe it.
Are you telling me?
No, he's not going to believe it.
He believed that the island was healing people on its own.
Right.
He probably thought you were, like, when Locke was bringing it up and all this spiritual stuff.
And it's after that conversation that we played before, the one that we're talking about now, that he then tells Kate, like, there's something wrong with him. So, you know, we're going to have a problem with this guy. And he winds up being a big focus in the next season.
Right. And Jack was probably like, well, it wasn't in my med book when I was going to school, so I can't believe this crap.
No.
Right. And that's another thing. It also relates to kind of the religious undertones that carry throughout the whole show. There's a bunch of characters on the show, Locke and Charlie being some of them, that have kind of a religious either background or just a religious outlook towards life. And there's a lot of religious references in the show, references to the Bible, even down to characters' names.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it goes very deep with how it, you know, it's trying to allude to the Bible.
We eventually learn that Jack's father's name is Christian.
Right.
So they're Christian Shepherd, Jack Shepherd. And he's a very complex person, and he has a story that we couldn't even, you know, that we could talk, you know,
you
spend
can dedicate
a whole episode on
such
just
a complex,
Christian Shepherd.
Complex show.
I don't think 5 minutes would justify the storyline with that guy.
Christian becomes more and more compelling. You don't really see him much in season one, but you get little snippets of him right from the beginning. Jack seeing him in the jungle.
But you see, like, visuals
and then,
of him.
You know, and then the flat, and then you learn he winds up being, even by the end of season one, a huge connection between characters.
Sure.
Okay. And those are the kinds of things that give you chills when you see Sawyer at the airport having a drink with him or whatever. It's like, what?
That's another thing we didn't even touch on, the connections that all the characters.
All the characters are related.
Just, yeah,
it's
somehow they cross paths
at some point in their lives. Yeah.
And at the end, he tells Jack, he tells the story of meeting someone at a bar in Australia who was a surgeon who had lost his medical license, who was drinking.
Right.
And then as he's telling Jack this story, Jack starts crying because he realizes it's his father.
Right. Right. And another thing is, you know, Jack was bringing his father back on the plane back to L.A. when they found him.
Right.
So that's because we just talked about how Jack was seeing his father on the island. That is a major plot point.
Oh, yeah. Because he opens the coffin and no one's
and he's
in
gone.
It.
And
no one's there. What?
And then, you know, all hell breaks loose and we're trying to figure out where this dead guy went.
Yeah. It's another literary allusion that the show makes, because that episode is titled White Rabbit, which is a clear reference to Alice in Wonderland. And Alice in Wonderland is one of those books and references that pops up like
everywhere.
Oh, yeah. We,
music,
we mentioned it earlier.
Culture.
Because everyone on the island is chasing something in some way. And Jack's is a little bit more literal, where he's chasing the ghost of his dead father.
It seems like Lost is like one giant board game.
Yeah.
When you think about it, it's just like everyone's got their own chess pieces and they're just trying to make their move to benefit them.
It's interesting that you bring up chess pieces.
Ooh.
Because Matt was talking about the religious undertones. We're talking about faith. We're also talking about symbolism. But games and colors of black and white tend to be interchanged throughout the show. And a lot of that is introduced early on in season one.
Yeah.
We have, when Matt was talking about religious undertones, when they first discover the cave area of the island, they eventually just call it the caves or the beach. Where are you going to live? You know, becomes the two locations. But the cave area,
east side, west side.
The first thing, basically, first thing they find are two skeletons, like decomposed bodies, and Jack immediately goes into scientist mode. Like, these look like they've been here. The clothes don't decompose
this
for
man
40
suffered
years.
Cardiac arrest.
He's like taking samples of the clothing, and and Kate's like, hey, what's this? And she finds black and white pieces, little black and white stones. And they're like, I don't know. What is that?
Right.
Meanwhile, by that point, you've already seen Hurley and Walt playing, what, backgammon? Or is it, what do they play? With black and white pieces.
Yeah, I think they play back. And yeah,
it
and
was a rousing game of
Lock
backgammon.
Locke teaches him how to play.
Locke teaches everyone to play backgammon at some point
right.
in the show. That's one of the first scenes where you see, when you hear him speak, actually, is him telling Walt, the child, about backgammon.
Yes. And he goes, there's two pieces, the two sides, black and white. And
light
he holds
and dark,
up the
yeah.
pieces, and it's awesome. It's brilliant.
That's right. A good, you know, comparison to black and white. The, you know, everyone's on different sides.
Yes.
Which, that's a theme that runs through the show throughout every season.
Right. So I think it's great that they introduce it like something that all audiences can understand. Here's black, here's white. Locke explains it
yeah,
to you.
It's very
He's
simple.
The father of everybody. You know?
It's a very simple concept.
But then if you think about it, if you're people like us who watched it every week eating hamburgers and talking about it.
I used to run home. I used to jump on the train, head back to Long Island to meet up with you guys.
We'd be texting you. You picking up the
patties. I don't think I ran... Yeah. That quick to get back home for anything. I would stop right. what I was doing
yeah,
and
but
just jump and get to Lost.
Then if you're people like us, you'll take the black and white, light and dark to another level and think about how were the characters different or how is their past the dark and now their island life
this,
lighted.
This show is way too complex for a massive audience of its of you know,
it's
broadcast
too big for
television.
A podcast.
Like I don't think a show like that would survive now.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's hard to say. I wouldn't have thought it would have been successful back then. I'm surprised it was as successful.
You know why? Because
as it was.
You can also watch it on a level of just like the characters.
That's true.
The character level is interesting
yeah, I mean,
and compelling enough without thinking about the symbolism.
You can watch it for the pretty people, or you can watch it for the deep religious tones.
You know,
right.
know how they survived, Kate. That's
but
it.
That's a good. That's it, yeah. that's the marking of a good.
The midriff.
Good. Yes, that's a good show because every person can relate to it on some level. If it was
yes.
too on the science end, it would lose.
It eliminates a lot of audience.
You know, no one's going to sit through that.
Well, that's great. That's great art, in my opinion. And this can go. This can be books. This could be movies. This could be TV. This could be music. When you have themes that are so powerful and so universal, you can choose to do what we do and dig deep and analyze them and really put your head into the show
and or commit a podcast
right
to it,
or
yeah.
you could or you could just watch it on a surface level and
right.
because those themes are so universal and so like they have
the plot was compelling enough
right the plot on its own is just crazy and compelling and twist and turn enough to keep you hooked so there was way different ways that audience could connect to the show depending on what type of viewer you were. And I think that's a powerful thing.
Yeah, and we haven't even mentioned, we're just talking about characters and their connections and themes that we didn't even talk about Smoke.
Right.
Forget about Smoke.
Well, that's like another thing. Like, we briefly touched on
the mystery
on
of the island.
What was that cloud floating around for, you know, how many seasons
you know,
it was?
You know, we're rewatching it this week, and every time the smoke comes on, we're like, what is the smoke?
6 seasons. That's 6 years of my life trying to figure out what the hell
we
that
still don't know.
Stupid cloud was floating
What's
around.
Well, that's we touched on it briefly, like the sci-fi elements that got people hooked. Like they shoot a polar bear in one of the
yeah.
first three episodes, and
I
you're
just
like,
shot a polar bear.
How is there a polar bear on this tropical island? And then you see
Walt reading the comic book with the polar bear.
Right.
Oh my god.
And then I think it's actually the end of the first episode of the pilot. You hear a monster in the woods. You don't see it as the smoke yet, but you're like, is this a dinosaur?
Am I watching Jurassic Park?
Right. Is this the Lost World Part 2? Like, are we bringing
yes.
this back to San Diego? What's going on?
That could have happened, and we all would have just went with it.
Right. But that black smoke is one of the other...
The pillar of smoke in the distance? It's terrifying.
Right. You don't know what it is, and you know it gets really, really deep as the show goes on through 6 seasons, but it's...
And then others.
If you decide not to break it down that deeply, at its core, it's just that is good and evil. That's what the black smoke is one of those things that represents.
Right. And then as the audience starts to discover that and the characters get terrified of each other, they start to break apart into little groups. And they're wondering who amongst us is capable of good and who is not.
Right.
Who's capable of working together. As Jack's famous quote throughout, he has a big speech at the beginning of season 1. And then through the whole series, his, you know, live together, die alone. See, and they break everything down to that.
See, I use the analogy that they're all on different franchises. They're all on different teams. And they all, I need your player on my team.
What's going on?
Like a lot of people jump ship and jump to other allegiances. Right. That's what I'm trying to
right.
say.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can start off with one group for most of the episode or the season. And then the next season, they'd be affiliated with a totally different group of castaways.
Right.
Which to use to their advantage and to help their cause.
There's a lot of that going on.
And
a lot of their allegiances depend on the point that each character realizes that they might not just be visiting this island. When
right.
they realize the more permanence of the situation, that's when their allegiances change.
Right. And that's like most of the time, as we touched on earlier, those allegiances usually lie, like Jack has his camp, Locke has his camp, and usually it's people who have kind of
gravitated
in, like Sawyer, for example, is someone who's accepted the fact that he's probably going to be here the rest of his life, and he spends a lot of time in Locke's camp. And a lot.
And that's not even season one. They
right,
haven't even split yet.
And the people that, you know, are more compelled to get off the island are tend to go with Jack, and I cannot believe we've gone this far into the episode with out mentioning Saeed.
Oh my god,
Saeed.
He's my favorite character.
He just popped into my head. I need to touch on him briefly.
He's awesome.
The Iraqi who spent time in the National Guard, was a torturer for the National Guard.
I'm a torturer.
He actually is one of the few people that doesn't have daddy issues.
Yes.
As far as I can remember.
Cold-blooded, man.
He's a cold-blooded
nothing
man.
Gets to him.
His weakness is actually one of the most unique out of anyone on the show because
right.
his weakness is his care for his friends.
Yes.
And Shannon.
Well, that becomes an extension of that. Yes.
One of the most unlikely romances
very weird.
In the history of television.
I don't believe any of
black,
that.
Black white. There you go.
Right.
Right.
The badass Iraqi soldier falling in with the bleached blonde.
We don't understand it. Even as it develops, it's like, what is going on
yeah,
between the two of them?
That just
nothing.
Didn't work for me.
No.
But
he's a smooth talker, man.
He's like a badass. He could break someone's neck with his hands
he could
tied
kill
behind
everybody
his
there.
Back. And his issues are he is extremely smart and extremely good survivor. But when you put his friends in danger, he'll give you what you want.
He's very loyal.
Right. He's an extremely loyal person to a fault. And that's something that he has to come to grips with throughout the season.
Yeah. And I think his most important flashback, he has a lot of important ones, but his most important one, I think, towards the end of season one is when you see him with a friend of his who is supposed to, like, do a suicide mission or whatever,
right.
a suicide bombing. And I think he is threatened that this guy needs to go through with it, and we'll tell, you know, and if he does, we'll tell you where this woman is. He's been chasing this woman.
He's working with like the NSA.
Yeah.
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 He's been chasing this woman that he let, you know, that he let free, that he once was commissioned to kill.
Right.
To torture. And he let her go and without anybody knowing. And they'll like, we'll let you know where she is if you make sure this is, you know, but then he lets this guy free as well. He can't deal with like making a decision like that.
Right.
And the guy kills himself anyway.
I feel like the writers of the show used the Iraqi situation going on at the time, because around 2003,
probably.
2004, that was the big news, was the U.S. invading Iraq for weapons of mass destruction. You know, Iraq wasn't exactly the best conversation piece to bring up to someone, and to use a character from that region, you know, that's a risky move.
It was also not that long after 9/11. So people are still thinking, have those thoughts in their minds.
Right.
So bringing him in is I think was risky.
Right. Now we have, John, I think has a little quiz for us today.
And now it's time for Strive for Five Trivia with Matt and John. Good luck, guys.
All right. So this is Lost related?
This is Lost-related questions.
Okay.
So, are you guys ready?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so are we going to compete here? It's going to be me versus Sarah?
Yeah.
All right, so what we'll do is we'll do, like, kind of a little buzz-in. Whoever wants to buzz in first, just yell out their name. Like, I'll yell out Matt, and if I answer first, I get the answer. But if I get it wrong...
If you're wrong, I go.
You get the steal.
All right, we're keeping score?
When I don't know any of the answers, then you all get to laugh at me.
Sweet.
So, I'm going to read off the first question.
Okay.
All right.
What
and
you
if
got?
You're listening at home, play along. You know, keep score and post your progress on our Facebook
page
or something.
I hope these are from season one because I don't know anything else.
Right. We'll find out. question number one. Which crash survivor is unwittingly living alongside his, her sister, Claire?
Matt.
Yes.
Jack.
Let's see. And the answer is...
What?
Jack.
Yeah. Come on, you knew
that. I know. I'm just kidding.
Don't let me win just because it's my show.
We got to give the guest a fighting chance.
Hey, I hold no prisoners
here. This is turning into a Lost episode.
Yeah, you know.
So, let's do the next question. Question number two. Who killed Shannon in season two?
Matt.
Oh, man. I'm not good at these things.
Did you buzz in?
No.
Yeah, I said Matt.
Okay.
Yeah, he did.
Anna Lucia.
Sweet. 2 for 2.
That's it.
This is like no competition.
No, I can't even. I'm bad at this. Matt knew that. That's why he made this quiz for me. All
right. Okay. Question number three. What do we got here? What is the name of the ship the survivors visit for dynamite, which also brought Richard Albert to
this.
The island? Richard Albert.
All right. Matt.
I just watched
yes.
this too.
The Black Rock.
Yes.
Sweet.
And I was thinking that, but I was afraid to say it.
Come on.
Matt's got three right.
I'm three.
This isn't looking good.
I've already won. Now,
yeah.
This is just for dignity now. Right. These last two questions.
27 more questions.
There's 30 more questions. Okay.
Right. Get comfortable, folks. Okay,
all
right,
guys. Lean in. All right. Question number four. Which character uses Desmond as his, her constant?
Matt.
Yes.
Crap, what's his name?
Oh my god.
Faraday.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I would never remember that name.
So Matt's got four.
That's a little deep. That's into like season four.
Yeah what's that, going on here?
Who made this damn quiz?
I don't know, but alright, it relates to the whole show.
Right.
We're just using the first couple seasons as a starting point. Question five. By what name is Sawyer known to members of the Dharma Initiative?
Ooh.
That I have no idea.
Matt.
Yes.
LaFleur.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Now, what was LaFleur?
Even
what was
that.
His first name?
Oh,
I mean, you're going to get credit for it anyway.
I have no idea.
Guy.
Guy?
Guy?
Yeah.
I don't remember that at all.
I don't remember
that
at
either,
all.
Actually. But that's a...
All right.
All right. Well,
five
you got
five
right.
Domination.
That's it.
Sorry, Sarah.
That's because I'm afraid. I'm scared.
Before, all right. So we briefly touched on earlier, and I want to touch on it now before the bottom of the show, kind of the cultural impact and the lasting impact of this series and how it's kind of changed television and changed our expectations towards television in the past, 10 years or so. It got to a point where people were creating message boards and blogs and things like that about this show. And now that's commonplace now. I mean, especially now with podcasting, everyone has a podcast about every type of show. I mean, I'm sure.
Right.
I'm sure there's a Lost podcast out there.
Oh, there are a bunch of them. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. My fiance listens to Orange is the New Black podcast. There's podcasts for everything and there's blogs for everything. There's Lost fans started calling themselves Losties. And Lostaways, and there's a Lostpedia.
We never actually did that with ourselves.
No, we didn't get that deep. But there's a Lostpedia, which is an extension of
that
Wikipedia, which is
it's wild.
That alone is like an amazing example.
That's a good resource.
That existed almost immediately.
That's
right
how
away.
Crazy this thing got, like right off the
Lostpedia.
Bat. And now I just want to go back and forth between us of why we think that it blew up the way it did, and why it had such a lasting cultural impact. John, I'll start with you.
Cultural impact. Looking back, the show's been off the air for, 4 years?
Right.
Yeah.
I think just the storytelling in general, I think it just set a new standard for engaging the audience, not making them feel stupid at the end of the episode.
That's
like,
true.
You kind of leave learning something, which I don't think you really get that kind of advantage now. I mean, you do with certain aspects of television.
It makes you think about yourself a
lot. I mean, there's a little bit of self-reflection, and you see like even these characters are vulnerable to any situation that happens, but I think there's a little bit of a life lesson learned when you watch. But
the year that I started watching Lost, which was I think when season 3 was in the middle, that's when I heard screams coming from my brother's bedroom when I
right
when he lives upstairs. And I was like, what's going on up there? I thought he was watching a reality show, and he was like, having a heart attack up there at the end of season three.
The end of every episode was very upsetting to me.
Yeah, and I was like, what is he doing up there? And then he's like, you have to watch the show. And he handed it to me, and that was it. But that year that I started, I was teaching eighth grade, and I didn't want to. And I used to have, that helped me get through. I used to be like, if Jack can give himself a blood transfusion in the jungle, like literally hooking his arm up to someone else as the guy's dying, he's amputating someone, the other girl's having a baby next to him, and they're on a freaking island. Right. I can teach the eighth grade for a day.
Right.
I used to have to think about that.
It
all
really
day.
Makes our problem seem insignificant.
It does. I'm like, man, their life is awesome over there.
And a good point also is it brought the term binge watching to like the forefront.
It did. That's I was thinking of that point. Before.
And this was before Netflix.
It kind of started it.
And having every episode at your fingertips.
Right.
I mean, you had to wait each week.
Yeah.
But if you jumped on the bandwagon and you had the DVDs, you didn't just watch one.
You watched
five in a row. Six
I watched
in a row.
The first two seasons on one Christmas vacation.
I spent a day just watching Lost.
See,
that's
actually a great point. I'm glad.
And you don't feel like you wasted your time.
No, you don't.
Right.
No.
I'm glad John brought that up because I think if Lost was released today for the first time or something similar to it, it would not be as effective because even though we each binge watch some of the seasons on DVD, I always thought the show was more effective when you had to wait a week.
Yes,
because
I agree.
It kept the conversation going through the week. And
you had to process the information.
Right, yes. Exactly. So if it was released today, hardly anyone does that. They either DVR it and watch them all at once or they get them on VOD or whatever. So the impact, I think, of the cliffhangers and the serialized way of storytelling would be somewhat diminished today. And I think that's one of the negative aspects of today's television, to be honest, is that no one has patience anymore.
No one can wait.
And they can't wait for a plot line to develop. They need to get the
instant
next
satisfaction.
Fix. Next fix right away, like Charlie in the bathroom of Flight 815.
Yes, and you know what happened to him.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
But I think we're living in a society where we need that instant satisfaction, and it could hurt or help, you know, if you got a TV show and you want that cult following. It could be a good thing or a bad thing. It depends on how you look at it.
One thing I just want to add about the impact as well. I think that when that show started and it opens, like we talked about at the very beginning of the show today, that it opens with Jack's eyes opening and you don't know who he is. And I think that sense of chaos that it creates kind of mirrors the chaos that a lot of us feel at certain times in our lives.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
oh,
that's
man.
Going, that's going
you
way
don't invite
deep.
The English teacher to these things.
I'm going
to
go sit at a cafe later and reflect on
that's
stuff.
That's it. So, like right now, like we were feeling chaotic at the beginning of this episode. Start talking about Lost makes you feel better.
If you don't hear me talk for the next 2 minutes, I'm reflecting. Keep the listeners.
We'll get the cricket sounds going.
In the loop here.
John's having flashbacks in his head to his childhood.
Oh, yeah.
Of him not being picked for the kickball team.
Oh man, I got traded.
Let's talk about
team.
That. Lay down on the couch for a second.
All right.
No, Sarah, continue.
Okay. Well, anyway, but just, you know, we talk about how they have to learn where they are and learn how to deal with a situation that they never imagined they could have been in. And that's how the audience feels. And that's what they go through. And as far as looking back at how it's important, that's what, you know, was a unique experience for an audience that we've never had that chance again to experience something that you're in. Everything is so mysterious and it takes 6 seasons to realize that it didn't mean anything at all.
Right.
The chaos was actually not organized.
A total waste of time.
At the end of the day, you just wasted your time and money.
What the fuck?
And you neglected your family.
Hey, well, Carlton
weeks.
Cuse and Damon Lindelof, the producers of the show, are just laughing their way to the bank.
Yeah,
yeah, like the last half of season 6, you're like, man, Lost is on tonight? I don't even want to know.
They own their own Lost Island. They don't.
I remember I'd be like, what happened last week again?
I was more of a fan of season 6 than I think you two were and most people, but I felt that way at points too. I was like, do I even want to know how this thing ends? Like, the first few seasons were just so compelling that everything after that was a little bit of a letdown.
Well, season three, that's when I jumped on board. And then I started to.
That's what I did too.
So I was like midway through where everyone else was like going crazy about this show.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But you're right. Maybe towards the end, it kind of lost its way.
Oh, boy.
I don't know. Ooh. But it was still a strong show regardless. Hey-o.
No, but there were a few shows after it that attempted the same style of storytelling, like shows like Heroes and things like that. They were successful for a short time, but that kind of ended up fading out. No show was able to maintain it the way
they even tried with what was it Fringe? What was it, the Fringe?
Oh yeah,
what?
Fringe.
I
was
tried
somewhat successful,
that.
But it didn't have the same staying power.
No,
it was on for like six seasons.
It
was, though,
I can't believe that. I only made it through
Alcatraz
like one.
Too on Fox.
Alcatraz.
They were trying to use that like mystic.
I never
mysterious
that.
I mean, I didn't.
They even used an island too.
And an island. Wow, that's really going far.
Right. But yeah, it's just amazing. It's really a phenomenon of a show and a unique, you know, place in TV history. There's never been anything like it. I don't think there ever will be. And no one has the balls to make a show like this.
No.
I don't know. Did they ever talk about how long that idea? I think they did. How long it took to piece together a lot of those details to start season one. Do you ever remember that?
No, I don't know.
I know. I've heard of what
I
you mentioned,
that
but
they
I don't remember.
I think we're back when we were obsessed back in the day when it was still on. I think there was like some interviews with them where they talked about that. But I would be interested to know that now,
right.
How long they actually had to plan that.
Right. Well, I do know that they kind of had to piece things together quick once fans started to get upset in later seasons that they weren't answering questions. But despite all that, I know the three of us loved it, and I'm just going to, you know, anyone who hasn't seen the show that's listening to this now, sorry for spoiling so many things for you.
But one thing they will...
There's
so much
going on, I don't think anyone would really get spoiled.
It's not going to ruin too much for you.
No.
So if you haven't seen the show, go back and watch it. It's really a milestone.
And then call us up and let us know what the hell's up with Nikki and Paolo.
Yeah. Let us know. Seriously, we want to hear your feedback on the show. If you were a fan of the show like us, let us know what you think about some of our points. And if you haven't seen the show yet, let us know what you think. And if this gets you interested in watching the series, I really think it's worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. And then also, I'm sorry if it gets you lost.
Yeah,
in the series.
We apologize if this gets you.
We're warning you.
Be prepared.
Your life's about to change.
To dump about a month of your life.
You're gonna neglect everything else.
To sci-fi fantasy bullshit.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, any last thoughts for you two guys before we wrap up?
No, I think everyone should just check out the show.
I mean, we have a million thoughts, but
as far as a
first course, this is Lost 101.
Yeah, I think it's a good introduction to the show. You know, and I think I relearned some things too, which is, you know, with the themes and stuff like that. That's pretty knowledgeable.
Right.
I wish I had this. I wish an episode like this going into the show when I first watched it.
Right. Exactly.
Because going in, you're kind of like, I don't know what I'm doing here. I'm on this island with these freaks.
And actually, the show was so involved that even if you had never seen it and you heard some spoilers here, you won't remember them.
No,
by the time
you
start watching, you won't even know who we're talking
That's
about.
That's a good thing.
I forgot everything that we talked about the show already. All right, so Sarah, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
For our listeners, it was probably very educational. You're very good with the analysis and all that. So it was great having someone like you here to help us pick this apart a little bit.
It was super fun. I was way too excited.
Yeah, Sarah has been our biggest fan since
day one,
episode one. So we really appreciate
her
support. And we're definitely going to have her on in later episodes to help us pick apart maybe some other movies and TV that we talk about on later episodes.
Yeah, so all the people you see tweeting these guys, that's me.
Right. That's Sarah.
Would you like to plug your Twitter?
No, I do not want to plug my Twitter.
Follow her at
There's nothing going on.
At Scandela9, right? Is that it?
Oh, man.
Oh, we got you.
As my students call me, Scandela. Scandela9.
That sounds...
It's ridiculous.
Borderline inappropriate. Sarah.
Yeah, well,
but
can't help it.
All right, John, let's wrap it up here.
Let's do it.
All right, so... As we mentioned at the top of the show, we're now on the Musings of a Geek podcast network. We're also up on sparkradio.us, Spark Radio Network, so be sure to check us out and all the shows on those networks as well. And you could always go to thatwillplaypod.com, find us on iTunes and Stitcher, and follow us on Twitter at thatwillplaypod, and search for us on Facebook. And as we said, you know, leave us your comments and thoughts on the show. We'd really like to hear people's feedback on this and see what they thought.
Yeah, we've been getting great feedback the last couple of weeks through iTunes, Facebook, Twitter. It's been phenomenal.
Right.
The show's growing each week.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
My feedback is the best.
And you got the best feedback.
Right.
And the best commentary.
And we got some exciting new guests coming up and some cool topics at the end of September. So stay tuned for those, and I think that's about it. Keep the reviews and keep the comments coming, guys.
All right, for myself, Matt, and Sarah, I want to thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next time. That'll play.
That'll play.